We're holding on Samach Amud Bey's nine lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday that we talked about, well, first we talked about on Daf Nun Tes if a Mizbeach is damaged, and we're going to learn later on Daf Samach Bey is what exactly there needs to be in the Mizbeach in order for it to be a kosher Mizbeach. One of them is it has to be perfectly square. So if that squareness is damaged, for example, then first we said on Daf Nun Tes that we talked about that Kodshim that were already shefted, are posel, and Rabbi Yochanan had said even Kodshim that have already been designated and not yet shefted are also posel. Then the Gemara had continued on Daf Samach and on Samach Amud Aleph that in addition, Rabbi Elazar says, if the Mizbeach is damaged, you can't eat Menachos or other Kodshim over there. Which are supposed to be eaten in the Azara, they're to be able to eat them depends on the Mizbeach. And then we had said that the Abaya had pulled from a Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, that the same is true of Kodesh and Kalin, that you can't eat them either anywhere in Yerushalayim as long as the Mizbeach is not intact. So he had proven it, so Rabbi Shmuel had talked specifically about Bechor, and Abaya had said, we see, once he says that about Bechor, then we can derive that the same thing is true of all Kodesh and Kalin. So now the Gemara continues, when Robin came up from Eretz Yisrael to when Robin came up from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, Robin used to travel back and forth. He was one of the Chachamim. He used to travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel to report in each place what the Chachamim in the other place had been learning and discussing. So when he came up, he told over this discussion, this statement of Abaya that Kodshim Kalin are that you can't eat them and they become then that you can't eat them anymore and then the meat of them becomes fossil when the Mizbeach is damaged. So he says it over Kamed Rav Yumi in front of Rav Yumi. Omar, so Rav Yumi reacts to that. He says, Bavloi Tipshoi, those foolish people from Babel, referring to this explanation from Abaya, these foolish people from Babel, Amatul the Yafi, Ba'arach HaShoicha, because they live in a dark land, because Babel is a low-lying area, so it's very shadowed and shady. Amri Shmaita de Machashcha, therefore, says Rav Yumi, they say teachings that are dark, that are not correct. Rav Yumi himself actually was from Babel, but we find in a number of places in the Gemara, he moved to Eretz Yisrael. When he was in Babel, he wasn't anything special. He wasn't one of the better Talmidim. Then he came to Eretz Yisrael and became one of the top Talmidim, and eventually was staying over here. He's the Rosh Hashiva, and he says, this is an example of Avirah de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, that the air of Eretz Yisrael makes you wise. And then the Gemara gives it elsewhere as an example of that a person comes from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, he becomes much wiser. The Gemara says one Talmud Chacham from Eretz Yisrael is worth two of us here in Bavel. Anyway, so now Rabbi Yirmiya is saying about this statement of Abaya that all Kodesh and Kalim also become possible and you can't eat them once the Mizbeach is damaged. Rabbi Yirmiya says that Abaya doesn't know what he's talking about. This study uses the expression that it's a dark land. We do actually find, as Rabbi Yirmiya himself says also in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, he says that when the Pasuk says in Eicha, V'machashakim Hashivani, Hashem has made me dwell in darkness, refers to Bavel. Again, because of the low-lying area, but second of all, we also find there and in some other places a contrast between the style of learning of the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, the Bavli, which is mostly what we learn, as all questions and answers and everybody jumping down people's throats and so on and so forth. And sometimes it takes quite a while until we get to the final answer. As opposed to in Eretz Yisrael, they learned in a more friendly and collegial way. They asked each other questions and answered. Of course, we find that in many places, but they did it not in a way so much of like attacking each other, but the Gemara in Sanhedrin there calls it that the Eretz Yisrael different way was what's called Makom Noyam, a staff that's used in a pleasant way, as opposed to in Bavel it was Mako Choivim. It was more like a staff that's used to damage and hit each other. So there was this idea that the Torah of Bavel, so Rabbi Yirmiya considered that the Torah of Bavel is inferior to that of Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam actually has a tshuva on the subject. I mean, the fact is, we learn the Gemara Bavli, and it's the basis of Halacha as we have it nowadays. How does this fit with all of this? So the Rambam explains in a tshuva that Rabbi Yirmiya is talking in an earlier period. Rabbi Yirmiya is contemporary with Rabba and Rabbi Yosef. We find in various Gemaras that in the times of Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, there was persecution of the Jews in Babel, and relatively speaking, during that time, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael had it easier. They were living under Roman rule, of course, but during that time, the Romans themselves were busy with a whole bunch of coups and assassinations and all kinds of things like that. So they didn't really have the time to harass the Jews much. So at that period, then is what Rabbi Yirmiyahu is talking about, that the Torah of Eretz Yisrael is better, and in Babel they don't know what they're talking about, and their style of learning is inferior. Later on, the Rambam explains things got much better in Babel, and you have ultimately that Rav Ashi is the next one after Rebbe that had Torah Gdula b'makom echad, where he had Torah and material and then political and all greatness in one place. So then that wouldn't apply the statement of Rabbi Yirmiyahu that Babel is inferior to Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, so Rabbi Yirmiyahu says, so I disagree with this that Abaye is saying that we can learn that all kodesh and kalim become possible if the mizbeach is damaged. Loi shmiel lehu hadatanya. Haven't they, the Chacham and Babel, including Abaye, haven't they heard what we learn in a braisa? B'shas siluk masos. In the desert, when it was time to break camp, So the cloud moves to a new place, and they're saying by Ibn Soya, and they're doing the whole procedure over there of breaking camp and moving to the next place in the Midbar. So now, at that point, one of the things, of course, they do is they take down the Mishkan, and they're moving all the Kalim, including the Mizbeach HaChitzon, in order to have the Levim. They wrap them up in their packing cloths, and they have the Levim carry them. So at that time, the Braisa says, Kodshim Nifsolin, any meat of Kodshim that had not been eaten yet becomes possible. Now the Braisa just says Kodshim, but Rashi and Tosfos both explain that it has to mean the Gemara itself is gonna explain in a few lines. Rashi and Tosfos spell it out over here that it means specifically Kodshim. So Kodshim become possible. Because Rashi says at this point the Gemara is assuming it's because the Mizbeach was moved from its place. So Rabbi Akiva Eger points out in Goyin Ashas, it's not really an assumption. This is exactly what Rabbi Yirmiyahu is saying. This is his proof from this and from the next Braisa. Tosfos discusses, is it really because the Mizbeach has moved, or is it maybe, after all, part of the moving of the Mishkan is also taking down the kloim, the curtains around the chotzer, and once that happens, then kodshim become possible anyway, because now there's no chotzer for them to be eaten, to be eaten inside. So Tosfos says maybe not, actually. Maybe, in fact, they would remain kosher, and therefore, as the Gemara is saying over here, the only reason for them to be possible would be because the Mizbeach was moved. However, the Braisa continues, the zovim umitzaroyim mishtalchem chutz l'machitza. However, zovim umitzaroyim still have to be sent outside of the machitza. Meaning, even though everybody is on the move, nevertheless, the kedusha of the machne Yisrael still exists. And even to a certain extent, the kedusha of the Mishkan, as he's going to explain later on some halachah from Beis, and therefore, So therefore, Mitzaroyim, who have to stay out of all three Machnas, and Zovim, who have to stay out of Machna Shchina and Machna Levia, the area of the Mishkan and the area where the Levium camp, they still have to be sent out of their respective Mechitzes. We find, actually, the Gemara in Brachas tells us, when you have the whole story in Parshas Chukas of the Amorim hiding out in caves on the border of between the lands of Moav and Sichon, where the land of Sichon actually afterwards became part of Evrayahud and part of Eretz Yisrael. So you have the Amorim hiding out in the caves over there and thinking that they're going to throw down arrows, or they're going to shoot down arrows and throw down rocks as the Jewish people passed through the valley, and Hashem made the two sides of the valley come together and crush the Amorim. So the Gemara says over there, there were two Mitzaroyim outside the Machna. They were traveling behind everybody else, and they saw blood oozing out from between the cracks of the rocks, and they went and told the Jewish people, and then everybody realized the nest that the Eibishter had done for them to save them from these Goyim. So we see that even when they're traveling, the Mitzaroyim have to stay outside the Machna. Okay, so now that's one braisa, which says, in other words, that the reason why the meat, so we see, in other words, that the concept of machnos and machitzes still exists, which is why the zovim and the tzeroyim have to be kept out of their respective areas. However, kodshim become possible. Why? Because the mizbeach was moved. Fine. That part so far he agrees with. That part so far he agrees with what we said before. He's not arguing with Havaya on that point. We did say before that Kodshei Kodshim become possible. So fine. This Braisa bears that point out. But But Tanya Ida, what we learn in another Braisa, continues Rabbi Yirmiya, the Shnei Mekoymes Kodshim Nafalim. There were two, the Kodshim could be eaten in two places. So one in the Machna during the time when they're camped in a particular place in the Midbar, then they're allowed to eat Shlomim and the various other Kodshim Kalim anywhere in the Machna. But then there's also a second place when they're traveling, they're also able to eat it when they're on the road. Even when the Mizbeach is taken apart, and even when the Mishkan is taken apart, and they're traveling. So we see then from that second Braisa that Kodshim don't become possible when the Mizbeach is moved. Now, so what is it? My lav, so don't we have to say, Hol b'Kodshim Kalim? Well, then it must be that the Braises are talking about two different kinds of Kodshim. Kodshim, which become possible when the Mizbeach is moved. And in the Beis Mikdash, the equivalent would be when the Mizbeach is damaged and no longer has the din of a Mizbeach, versus Kodshim Kalim remain kosher, and therefore, so how can Abayah say that Kodshim Kalim also become possible? So one point is why you have to bring both Braises, because otherwise we might say there's a difference between the Mizbeach being moved and there not being a Mizbeach at all. Tosfos, in fact, mentions such a point further on in the Sugya. But from the first Braisa, we see that clearly when the Mizbeach is moved, it is considered that there's no Mizbeach at all. The Shittim Kovetzis discusses, the question is, fine, Reb Yumia has the question and he's criticizing Abaya, but how can he criticize Abaya? The fact is, Abaya is basing himself on a Braisa of Rabbi Shmuel, who had said this din explicitly by Bukhur. So Shittim Kovetzis answers, well, that's exactly it. Reb Yumia is criticizing Abaya. He's saying, very well, Rabbi Shmuel is saying that concept applies to Bukhur, that if a Mizbeach is moved or damaged or whatever, then you can't eat a Bukhur anymore. Where are you getting that it should apply to all Kodshim Kalim as well? You have a Hekesh in the Pasuk, because the Pasuk lists a bunch of Korbanos together. But you have, if you look in the post, it mentions Zivcheichem, your Korbanos, then it mentions Masri Seichem, which is your Meiser Cheney, and only then does it mention the Bechoros Bekarach from the Tzonchem. So therefore, Abaya had taken that to mean that nevertheless, since they're installed in the same Pasuk, then we can compare Bechor to all other Kodshim Kalim to Zivcheichem. And Rabbi Yirmiya is saying, what are you talking about? The most you can do is you can compare Bechor to Meiser as Rabbi Shmuel had done, and saying that Meiser and Bechor can both be brought and eaten in Yerushalayim only when there's a Beis Mikdash, only when there's a Mizbeach. But you, Abaya, want to say that it also means all other Kodshim Kalim, based on the fact that they're in the same Pasuk. The fact is they're much further away in the Pasuk, and therefore that's not a valid head. So Rabbi Yirmiya is saying we have these two braises, whereby putting them together on the face of it, it means that Kodshim Kalim indeed become possible when the Mizbeach is moved, and the equivalent in later generations will be when it's damaged, but not Kodshim Kalim. So, and yet Abaya is saying that Kodshim Kalim became possible as well. However, the Gemara says, Omer Rabina. So Rabina answers to answer Rabbi Yirmiya's objection, Loikasha. Omer Rabina. Aydi v'aydi v'kodshim kalim. Both of them, in fact, both braises are referring to Kodshim Kalim. The one braisa. So you thought, Rabbi Yirmiya, that the first one, that of neither one explicitly said Kodshim or Kodshim Kalim. The first one said Kodshim Nifsolim, the second one said Kodshim Nechalim. So Rabbi Yirmiya had assumed that one is Kodshim and the other is Kodshim Kalim. Ravina says, no, both of them are talking about Kodshim Kalim, Voloi Kasha, but there's no contradiction between the two braises. One which says they're possible when the Mishnah is moving, and the other one that says they can be eaten in the two places, because Horab Ishmael, Horabbanan, because the two braises go according to the opinions of Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanon, respectively. Rabbi Shmuel, we said earlier, learns a Gzeira Shav, a Hekesh, between the meat and the blood of the korban, because the Pasuk puts them together as Domam Tizrek on the Mizbeach Ves Chelbom Tachtir of Sodom Yilach, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel had said, when you can't sprinkle the blood because the Mizbeach is damaged, then, and therefore it doesn't function as a Mizbeach anymore, then you also can't eat the Bechor. But therefore that first braisa is saying therefore that the Bechor, and yes, all of the Kodshim Kalim become possible when the Mizbeach is moved. Of a Horabonan, but the second braisa is according to the Chachamim who don't use that who don't use that heckish. They don't do the heckish between Boston and Dom. And as far as the heckish that Rabbi Shmuel had mentioned between Bechor and Meister, they use it for other things. Tosfos refers to a Gemara and Tzmura where Rabbi Akiva and Ben Zoyma use them for other drashas. Rabbi Akiva uses it to learn that you don't bring Bechoras of animals from Chutz Laaretz, just like you don't bring Meister from Chutz Laaretz. And Ben Zoyma learns that it means that both of them can be eaten only that both of them are eaten inside Yerushalayim, but nothing to do with whether the Beis Hamikdash is standing or not. So therefore, so the second Braisa, which says that Kodshin remain kosher even when the Mishkan is on the move, would be a point to the Chachamim against Rabbi Shmuel. So therefore, so we could very well say that so Abaya can hold like Rabbi Shmuel, like the first Braisa, and therefore no problem for him to say that Kodshin Kalim become, or that all Kodshin Kalim become possible when the Mizeach is moved, and therefore Rabbi Yumi's objection falls away, says Rabbi Yumi. So another answer, the boy same, or another possibility, we can answer, in fact, both braises could be talking about kodshim. So even kodshim, where we said before, everybody agrees that the mizbeach needs to be standing. Nevertheless, we can still reconcile the two braises and say that one is explaining that kodshim remain kosher, and the other one says that they're possible because what do we mean? The first braisa means that exactly what it sounds like. When the mizbeach is moved, then the kodshim become possible because now the mizbeach is not functioning. But when the second braisa says that you can eat kodshim b'shnei mekoymes, what does it mean that you could eat it in two places? So we thought Rabbi Yemiya had explained that the two places means when the mishkan is standing and when the mishkan is on the move. But no, says the Gemara. You could equally well answer. So you can say the two places, Kodim Shiyamidu Levimas on Mishkan, before the Levim set up the Mishkan. Now Rashi, we'll explain in a second. Rashi explains in some detail, this doesn't mean actually before they set it up, but rather after, it really means when the Mishkan is set up, before they take it down. Versus after the Levim take down the Mishkan, but the Mizbeach is still in its place. So in other words, like this, Rashi explains, when we say Kodim Shiyamidu HaLevim Asam Mishkan, Rashi explains as follows. It can't mean before they actually put up the Mishkan, because first of all, Rashi explains two reasons. Number one, the order in which they carried the Mishkan was as follows. They would take down the Mishkan. The Bnei Gershon and Bnei Merari are responsible for the structure of the Mishkan. Bnei Gershon would carry the curtains and then the things related to them, and Bnei Merari would carry the beams. The Nesiim donated wagons, as we talked about the other day, and Bnei Gershon and Bnei Merari would use those to carry the things that they need to. They would go right behind the first Degel, the first division of Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvolun. And then Bnei Kohos, meanwhile, the Kohanim would be wrapping up the Caleb of the Mishkan, and then they'd give them to Bnei Kohos to carry, and Bnei Kohos would carry them behind the Degel, behind the division of Reuven, Shimon, and Gad, which is the second division. So that way, the Bnei Gershon and Merari have time when Yehudi, Yisachar, and Zvulun, when that first camp arrives in their next destination, then the Bnei Gershon and Bnei Merari immediately get to work setting up the structure of the Mishkan, and then by the time Reuven, Shimon, and Gad come, and Kohos right after them, then the Mishkan building is already, the Mishkan structure is already set up, and now the Levim can put the respective Kalim, the Aron, and the Shulchan, and the Mizbechus, and so forth, in the places that they belong. So therefore, Rashi points out, so you can't very well have a situation when we say Kodim Shiyamidu Alevim Asam Mishkan, where the Mizbeach should be in place, and then the Levim put up the Mishkan, because it doesn't work that way. First they put up the Mishkan, then they set up the Mizbeach where it belongs. So it can't be, Rashi says. And besides that, Rashi points out another point as well. We learned in the previous parak that if Shlomim, and then Rashi assumes that this is not only Shlomim, but all Karbonis, are shefted before the doors of the Heichel are open, then they're possible. So therefore, that means there has to be a Heichel there. There has to be a building. So therefore, the building of the Mishkan has to be the main building of the Mishkan. The Kodesh Kodashim has to be up and the door open before they can start shefting Shlomim and offering them on the Mizbeach. So therefore, Rashi says, again, when it says Kodem Shiyam Midra Alvimas HaMishkan, doesn't actually mean before they set it up. It means when the Mishkan is standing. Means when the Mishkan is standing. However, Rashi says maybe you could still salvage the meaning that it means before the Levim set up the Mishkan. Let's say, for example, that they actually did it out of order. Let's say it so happened that they brought the Mizbeach first and set it up in their new destination, and you don't have the rest of the Mishkan built yet. And as far as the point about the about Pesach Ayomor, that there has to be a door, and the door has to be open, Rashi says maybe that applies only to Shlomim, not to other Korbanos. We discussed that when we learned this point on Nunheyom Abeis, about Shlomim being possible if they're shechted before the door is open. We talked about there about, in fact, whether that applies to Shlomim only, or which is where the Pesach says it, or does it apply to all Korbanos. Anyway, so that's the point. That's all Rashi. Tosfos points out there are other places from which we see that other kodshim are also possible before the door is open, so that means the doors have to be there. So therefore, Tosfos says no, there really is no way to, other than to say that kodim shem yachshav midra alavim as mishkan means when the mishkan is still standing in its proper place. The chiddush then is more after they take it apart. That, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, since even the main building of the Mishkan has been taken down, but as long as the Mizbeach and the Chotzer are still in its place, then it still has the kedusha. So therefore, that would be the real chiddush. So again, the two places would be when the Mishkan is standing, and after the Levim take apart the Mishkan. Even then, the second braisa is saying that the kodshim do not become posel. Now, why would we think they were? You would think they become posel by having gone out, because now they're not within the chotzer of the Mishkan. So Kamash Malan, therefore saying that's not considered going outside the Kloyim, and therefore the kodshim remain kosher. But nevertheless, we're talking about, it's not a case where the Mizbeach has been taken away. The Mizbeach is still there. But let's say the Kloyim have been taken down. Nevertheless, it's still kosher to eat kodshim. But once the Mizbeach is on the move, then it's posel, and then that would be what the first Braisa is saying. So again, then the two Braisas could be talking about kodshim, and still no contradiction on Abaya. Tosfos actually learns a little differently. We would have to be talking about that not only the Mizbeach is still there, but the Kloyim, the curtains around the Chotzer, are all still there. The only thing that's been taken down so far is the main building of the Mishkan. But if the Kloyim were taken down, then Tosfos learns that actually, since there's no Machne Shechina, then that's what we're saying, that Kodshim would in fact be possible because of Yotze, because now they've been taken down and there's no machitzis anymore. So the Gemara says, the Ema Hokinami, how indeed do you know? Maybe indeed the Korbanos, the Kodshim, would become possible because now they're not within the Kloyim anymore and they have to be eaten within the Kloyim. And the answer is, Amakra, yeah, but the Pasuk says, the Nosa Oihol Moyed. The Pasuk says the Oihol Moyed should travel, from which we learn, Afapisha Nosa, even though the Oihol Moyed is traveling, Oihol Moyed who, it still has the din of the Oihol Moyed, and therefore the meat of Kodshim is still considered to be within the Mechitzis. Now, though, as we said, the Mizbeach has to be in its place, so that's how we reconcile the two braises. As long as the Mizbeach has not been picked up yet, then they can continue to eat Kodshei Kodshim, even though the Chotzer has already been moved. But once the Mizbeach has been taken away, then that would be possible. Or according to Tosfos, we're talking about the first braisa is talking about when the Mizbeach and the Chotzer is still there, even though the main building of the Mishkan has been taken down. Nevertheless, it's not considered Yotze. It still has because the Oyel Moed itself still has the Kedusha even when it's been moved. But once the Kloyim are taken down, then yes, says Tosfos, the meat will become possible because of Yotze, because now there's no more Mechitzis. And then, of course, when the Mizbeach is moved, it's anyway possible because the Mizbeach was moved, and as we're saying, once the Mizbeach is moved and it's not functioning anymore, then it's not considered the Mizbeach. Here's where Tosfos makes a point that actually it's possible to say that maybe there's a difference between the Mizbeach being moved versus being damaged. So the Gemara might be meaning that point as well. So the point is that if we learning the braisis in those ways, then Rabbi Yumi's question on Abaya is not a question, and we can after all say like Abaya is touching the ground and possible. What? Did you say something?
Yeah, there's a question. If that's the case, then if there are remnants of the Nusach today on Har HaBayis, maybe we could say the same.
Well, so, I mean, remnants wouldn't be good enough because you have to have, again, the Mizbeach has to be square and has to have, we're going to learn later on Sunday, Samach Bey, we're learning on Matzah Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem, a number of features that the Mizbeach has to have in order to be kosher. So, no, we wouldn't have that. However, we do have what we learned before, that Rabbi Yehuda says that the entire floor of the Azara has the Kedusha of the Mizbeach. So we've talked about before. We talked about a little bit yesterday. The Rambam writes, for example, based on other Gemaras, that we are indeed able to bring Korbanos even when there's no Beis Mikdash and as long as there's a Mizbeach. And there are, in addition, you have Rishonim who learn that maybe even when there's no Mizbeach, even then maybe we could. We were talking about Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris going and trying to bring a Korban Pesach, and over the centuries there's been different Rabbanim who held like that. The Tafta Raferach has another major Rishon who holds that we could bring Korbanos nowadays, even though there's nothing there. And I mentioned yesterday about how in the years after the Six-Day War, when it was still in principle possible for Jews to reassert their ownership over that, or our ownership over the Har HaBayis, then the Rebbe would tell people not to be in the old city Erev Pesach, so they don't get into the question of whether they have to bring a Korban Pesach. So, there are definitely Rishonim who hold that you could do such things even when there's no Mizbeach, but the majority opinion is that not. The majority opinion is that there are many reasons why we can't bring Korbanos nowadays. Among them is the fact that there's no Mizbeach. So if nothing else, we'd have to build a Mizbeach according to the minimum specifications in order to be able to bring Korbanos. And then, of course, there are all kinds of other issues that come up as well, including the fact that we're all Tomei, and including the question of Koyanim and Bigdei Kohuna, and so on and so forth. Okay. Talking further about the Mizbeach, about the various Mizbeachas, we mentioned before on Dachnum Test that there was the original Mizbeach that was made in Moshe Rabbeinu's times, and we had the Machlokas of Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi about both the width, about the, both the length and width and the height of it, where Rabbi Yossi had said that it was 5 by 5 amos and 10 tall, and Rabbi Yehuda had said that it was 10 by 10 amos and 3 amos tall. And then later on, we talked about the Mizbeach that Shlomo made in the first Beis Mikdash, which was the base of it, the Yesod, was 28 by 28 Amos, and then the Mokam HaMarocha, the area on it where you could actually burn the Korbanos, was 20 by 20 Amos. So now let's talk more about the Mizbeach, about the different Mizbeachas that there were in Jewish history. Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, Mizbeach shel Shiloh shel Avonim Hayah. The Mizbeach that was in the Mishkan Shiloh was made out of stones. So let's review. Let's review the history of the Mishkan and the Beis Hamikdash. We're going to have much more about it at the very end of our Masechta. They built the Mishkan in the Midbar, in the second year when they were in the Midbar, and they continued to have the Mishkan with them for the remaining 39 years in the Midbar. After that, they crossed the Yarden, they came into Eretz Yisrael. The first place they set up the Mishkan was in the city of Gilgal. At that point, the Aron was not always together with the Mishkan, because in general, they would take the Aron with them to war, and they spent the next 7 years conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael. So the Mishkan in Gilgal actually had the Dinim of Bama, and you were allowed during those 14 years, you were allowed to, in the Midbar, you were, once the Mizbeach, once the Mishkan was built, you weren't allowed to bring Korbanos anywhere else. But now, when the Mishkan moved to Gilgal, and it's not considered a full-fledged Mishkan, then they were allowed to bring Korbanos anywhere they wanted, and maybe not even all the Korbanos of the regular kinds could be brought in Gilgal. We're going to learn at the end of the Masechta a lot of details about that. After that, once they finished conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael, they set up the Mishkan in Shiloh, and it remained there for 369 years. So throughout the period of the Shoftim, whenever we talk about them going to the Mishkan, we're always talking about the one in Shiloh. Chana and Elkanah went there, and so on and so forth. We're going to learn at the end of the Masechta that in Shiloh, the actual structure was made out of stones, but they still continued to, instead of the beams of the Mishkan, but they put the curtains of the Mishkan on top of it. So it was like a hybrid, partially stone and partially still curtains. So that was 369 years. Then Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed. They set up the Mishkan in Noiv, in the city of Noiv. It remained there for about 13 years, and then you had the whole story with Shoal and the killing of the Kohanim of Noiv. Then it moved to the city of Givon and remained there for the next 40-some years, until Shlomo built the first Beis HaMikdash, and then you have the Beis HaMikdash. During the time, we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta, during the time when the Mishkan was in Noiv and Givon, was again a time it wasn't considered a full-fledged Mishkan, because the Oren was elsewhere, and therefore, again, they were allowed to bring Korbanos in other places. The Mizbeach in Shiloh was made out of stones. So now for the first time, until now, they have a Mizbeach made out of wood and plated with copper. Now they have a Mizbeach, says Rav Huna, that was made out of stone. And Rav Huna says, D'tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rav Huna says in the name of Rav, D'tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Ma Tamad Lema Avonim, 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 three times the Torah says that Mizbeach has to be built out of stone, at the end of Parshas Yisroi, and twice back to back in Parshas, Kisavo, the context there, it's talking about the Mizbeach that they're to build on Har Evel during the Brachas and Klolos, but still we learn from it that in general the Mizbeach is supposed to be built out of stone. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says why? Echad Shol Shiloi, one teaches us that the Mizbeach of Shiloi had to be built out of stones, the Echad Shol Noiv Givon, the second one teaches us Noiv and Givon. Rashi points out, Noiv and Givon are counted as one because they're both of them considered a bama and they don't have the full kedusha of the Mishkan and they were back to back. So the Echon Shal Obeis Olamim, so one of Shiloh, the Echon Shal Noiv and Givon, Obeis Olamim, and the third one is the one in the permanent Beis HaMikdash. So all of those had to be built out of stones. So the Gemara says, Mosi Rav Acha Ba'ami. Rav Acha Ba'ami says I have a contradiction to that. We learn in a Braisa. The fire that came down on the Mizbeach in Moshe's times. We have, they brought all the Korbanos during the Miluim, and they didn't yet have a fire, and Rashi mentions in the Pasuk on Parshas Shemini that Aaron is very upset and thinking it's because of his role in the Chet Egel, and they went inside the Mishkan to Davin, and then the Pasuk says, a fire came down from Shemayim and burnt up the Korbanos and rested on the Mizbeach. So that fire, says the Braisa, lo nistalko ma'amizbach ha'nechoshes, ela bimei Shlomo. It never left the Mizbeach ha'nechoshes until the time of Shlomo. What happened to it while they were traveling? Rashi brings from Sifri, Rashi mentions it on the Psukim and in Parshas Bamidbar as well, that they would put a copper pot over the fire, and then after that they would put on the packing cloths that are described at the end of Parshas Bamidbar that they would use to pack up the Mizbeach. So this way the fire won't burn through the cloth because it's covered over by this copper pot. So the fire continued to remain there on the Mizbeach and the Choshes for hundreds of years until the time of Shlomo when he built the first Mizbeach of stone. So this is a question that we see that only in Shlomo's times was a new Mizbeach built. The Eish Shiyoda B'mei Shlomo, and then the fire that came down in Shlomo's times, it didn't leave the Mizbeach until Menashe came and removed it. Menashe, Melech Yisrael, one of the worst Rishoyim among Malchi Yehuda, although later on he did Shuvah. At one point, the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that he tore down the Mizbeach. So at that point, the fire left the Mizbeach. The Pasuk, by the way, in Melachim, when it describes the Chanukas Habayis, it doesn't mention anything about the fire coming down from Shemayim. It mentions it in Divrei Hayamim. In Divrei Hayamim, it uses the expression that it came down from Shemayim, where our Gemara seems to be saying that it left the Mizbeach and the Choshes and went to the new Mizbeach of stone. So on the face of it, it means, in other words, that when it says it went off the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, would be that it returned to Shemayim and then came down from there. Although the Malbim on the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim says very simple, that it didn't actually come from Shemayim, but everybody saw how it's Minah Shemayim, that it's transferring from one Mizbeach to another. All of a sudden, this fire that was on the Mizbeach HaChitzah, on the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, all of a sudden, miraculously transferred to the new Mizbeach of stone, and therefore everybody realized that that is Minah Shemayim, so that can be called that Yoda, that it came down from Shemayim. Anyway, the point is, the Braisa is saying that the fire that was on the original Mizbeach was there from Moshe's times until Shlomo's times. So now, says Rav Acha Ba'ami, V'im Issa, if you're telling me like Rav, that already in Shiloh they had a new mizbeach made out of stones, then it comes out the fire left long before, many years before Shloimeh's times, because there were hundreds of years before Shloimeh's times, because the Mishkan Shiloh, again, existed for 369 years, and then Noivin Given for 57 years, so altogether you have 420 odd years, between when the Mishkan of Shiloh was built and when and Shloimeh's Chanukah Sabayis, more even actually, because it took them a few years to build the first Beis Hamikdash, and then there's the Chanukah Sabayis. So what's going on with what Rav is saying, that the fire remained on the Mizbeach until Shloimeh's times? What is Rav saying then, that the Mizbeach of Shiloh was already built out of stones? So the Gemara answers, Huda Amak Rav Nosson. One answer you could say is Rav is saying like Rav Nosson. So you do have Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, but you have Rav Elazar ben Yaakov saying that the Mizbeach of Shiloh was built out of stones. Now Rashi points out that Rav Elazar ben Yaakov is not necessarily saying that it was built out of stones, just that it could be. But we're going to have Rav Nosson explicitly saying that the Mizbeach in Shiloh was built out of stones. The Tanya, Rav Nosson, I mean, we learn in a Braisa that Rav Nosson says Mizbeach shel Shiloh, shel nechoshes haya, the Mizbeach of Shiloh was made out of copper, cholol, and it was hollow, umolei avonim, and it was full of rocks, it was full of stones. So Rav Nosson is saying, in other words, that they used stones and then they plated it with copper. Shulchan Aruch Kuvetz brings up another possibility. You could also understand it to mean that they used the same mizbeach of Moshe's times, but instead of filling it with earth as they had done until now they filled it with stones. One way of explaining is that Rav Nosson is in fact disagreeing is explicitly saying that it was made out of stones, and therefore that would be Rav is following that and saying it was made out of stones. He'd be disagreeing with that point about the fire remaining on the original Mizbeach until Shloimeh's time, because according to him, it would have moved to this new Mizbeach of Shiloh right away. It was plated with copper, but the body of it was made out of stone. According to Shitam Kobetsis, the point is that Rav Nosson is not arguing with anything we said until now. They continued to use Moshe's Mizbeach, they just filled it up with stones, and therefore that would be what Rav Huna is telling us in the name of Rav, that the Mizbeach of Shiloh was made out of stones, not that the whole thing was made out of stones, but that the empty space inside was filled with stones. So that's one answer. Rav Nachman Yitzchok Amar, Milo Nistalka. Rav Nachman Yitzchok says, what does that mean when the Braisa says that this fire did not leave the Mizbeach HaNechoshes until Shloimeh's times? Means Lo Nistalka L'Batola. It didn't leave and become bottle from the Mizbeach HaNechoshes completely. Sometimes, as the Gemara is going to say, it was there partially. But then in Shloimeh's times, it completely moved from that Mizbeach and went to the other one. As we learned the other day also, according to Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of the Pesukim, that he had actually declared the Mizbeach and the Choshes Posel, and therefore, because it's too small, and therefore in token of that, Hashem approved of that, Hashem ratified that by having the fire completely and permanently move from the Mizbeach and the Choshes to the new Mizbeach of stones that they had built. So Rav Nachman Yitzchok's answer is that Rav is saying the Mizbeach of Shiloh was made out of stone. Fine. Then the fire still continued to be on the Mizbeach and Nechoshes, but that doesn't mean that there was no fire on the Mizbeach on the Mizbeach of stones as well. So what does that mean, Maihi? What was going on? So Rabbanan Ami, one answer is the Chachamim said Shviva have a Meshadra. What happened was the fire was mainly on the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, but then they would be using the stone Mizbeach, and they'd be putting the pieces of the Korbanos on it, and sparks and tongues of fire would go and stick out and travel from the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, where the fire still was from Moshe Rabbeinu's time, to the Mizbeach Avonim, to the stone Mizbeach, and burn the Korbanos over there. So in other words, they would put a fire on the Mizbeach Avonim. Of course, you have a mitzvah to put fire on the Mizbeach. But the main fire that was burning things was the one that it remained on the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, because there wasn't yet a new Mizbeach that has the full Kedusha of that one until the Beis HaMikdash. But meanwhile, every time a korban was there and needed to be burned, then a tongue of fire would shoot out from the mizbeach hanachoshes and consume the korban that had been placed on the mizbeach havani. That's one answer. Rapapa ama ushvida havanokot. Rapapa says it was like a guest. Zimnin hocha, v'zimnin hocha, v'zimnin hocha. Sometimes the fire would be on one mizbeach, sometimes on the other. So when the braisa said before, that it didn't leave the Vatala, it means exactly that. In other words, that sometimes it would temporarily leave the Mizbeach and Achoshes and go on to the stone Mizbeach, maybe depending on how the Jewish people are acting at that time, whatever, but at other times it would be on the Mizbeach and Achoshes, only in Shloimeh's times when the stone Mizbeach in the first place Mizbeach was built, then the fire permanently left that one and went permanently left the Mizbeach and Achoshes and went to the Mizbeach Avonim and remained like that for good until Menashe's times. So therefore no contradiction on Rav, because we're saying that because it wouldn't be according to either explanation, either it remained permanently on the Mizbeach and Achoshes all those years, but tongues of fire from it would shoot out to the other one, or sometimes it would move off the Mizbeach and Achoshes and then move back there afterwards. Okay. Talking more about the size of the Mizbeach in different periods, the Gemara says Tnan Hossam. We learn in a Mishnah in Midas as follows. The Mishnah says there that, as we said before, the Mizbeach in the first Beis Hamikdash, the base of it was 28 by 28 amos, and the Mokam HaMa'arachah, the area on top of it where they could put wood piles and burn the korbanos, was 20 by 20 amos. Then the Mishnah continues in Midas that Rav Yossi says, the Mishnah starts saying over there that the Mizbeach on the second Beis Hamikdash was 32 by 32 amos. So Rav Yossi explains that in the first Beis Hamikdash it was smaller, it was 28 by 28, and then, Uchsha'olu b'nei ha-goyla, when the people came up from the Goyla, from Bavel, to build the second Beis Hamikdash, Hoisifu Olav, they enlarged the size of the Mizbeach, Arba Amos Min Adorim, V'Arba Amos Min Amayrim. Four extra amas to the south and four extra amas to the west. Now the Mizbeach has to be square, as the Gemara is going to say further on. So they made it larger. They added on two sides kamin gamma, like the Greek letter gamma, which is like the shape of an English capital L. So they added on two sides of the Mizbeach. Why they did that, the Gemara is going to explain. The Gemara is going to explain soon. Tosfos actually brings up a big problem with that. We learned in the previous perek that there was no yisoid on the southern side of the Mizbeach because where there should have been a yisoid on the southern side was in the territory of Yehuda, and the Mizbeach had to be entirely in the territory of Binyamin. Well then, if we're saying that they added four amas to the south, well then, so that means they're building into Yehuda's territory. So first, Tosfos brings a girsa that the correct thing should be that they added to the north and to the west. So therefore, no problem, they're not building south or east, and therefore they're not encroaching on Yehuda's territory. However, Tosfos says that doesn't seem to work out, based on the reason the Gemara is going to explain soon, that they needed to incorporate the Shisin into the Mizbeach. The Shisin are located on the south side of the Mizbeach. Tosfos says, no, fine, the way we have it, south and west, is correct. What happened was, we can say that, yes, in the Bais tradition, there was, in fact, a Yisoid on the southern side of the Mizbeach, because why not? It's still a few amos into Binyamin's territory. The eastern side, fine, that not. So in other words, Tosfos is saying that in the first Beis Hamikdash, there would have been a Yisoid on three sides of the Mizbeach, whereas in the second Beis Hamikdash, there was only on two sides, like we learned in the previous parak. What about the psukim that we said that the southeastern corner doesn't have a yisoid? That would be the Bais Sheni. It's referring to the Bais Sheni, which didn't have a yisoid in that corner, but in the first mission, in fact, there was a yisoid in that corner, at least in there was a yisoid along the whole south, and therefore you had at least part of the southeastern corner had a yisoid. Also, Tosfos says the fact is, again, if we learn that the yisoid only stuck out in the direction where there wasn't one and it didn't actually turn the corner, then it means that corner as a whole did not have a yisoid. The eastern side of it did, the southern side did not. Or the other way around, the southern side had, the eastern side did not. And then Tosfos also says that maybe since the Nevi'im would have known that there's going to be later on the Mizbeach is going to be larger and that it's going to be directly on the borderline between Yehuda and Binyamin, and therefore they can't be Yisod on the south side. So even in the first Beis Hamikdash, they wouldn't have used that part of the Yisod for pouring blood. So several different possibilities. Okay. In any case, so the Mishnah says of it that they added on two sides of the Mizbeach to make it, again, 32 by 32, with the top of it therefore being 24 by 24, instead of in the first Beis Hamikdash, 28 by 28, and the top being 20 by 20. So there wasn't my time on. Why is that? Why did they enlarge it? Amar Rav Yosef, Mishum Dolei Sipur. So Rav Yosef says because they didn't have enough room. The Mizbeach was physically not large enough to offer all the korbanos on it. So, Amalei Abayas. Abayas is what he means. Hashtem Mikdash Rishon, considering the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, Dichtiv Bei, and it says about the population of Jews then, Yehuda B'Yisrael Rabin Kachol Asher Asfas Ayam L'Roi, in the Sfas, in the Pasuk, Kachol Asher Ayam Asher Ayam, the Yehuda and the rest of the Shvatim were as numerous as the sand on the seashore, fulfilling Hashem's promise to all the others that it would be like that. So you had an enormous number of Jews, Sipik, and yet the Mizbeach was big enough to handle all the Korbanos. Mikdash Sheni, well then the second Mikdash, Dichtibei Kolakol Ka'echad Aver Riboy, altogether, the total number of Jews who came to build the second Mikdash was only 42,000 and change. So it was a far smaller population. So you're telling me Lois Sipik, and you're telling me the Mizbeach wasn't big enough and they have to make it bigger? Now the Sfasemes points out Jews in Chutzlaretz would also have to come there to bring their korbanos. But the fact is that many Jews apparently weren't going to be bringing korbanos at all. They stayed in Golos and they weren't in any hurry to come build the second Beis Hamikdash and settle in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore we can assume that the number of Jews who were actually bringing korbanos on a regular basis was not any more than that 42,000 and some that it says in the pasuk, or not much more at least. So Abaye says, how could you possibly say that the Mizbeach couldn't have fit all their korbanos? Amalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, the difference is Hosam Eishol Shemayim Misayadzan. The difference is that in the first Beis Hamikdash, the fire from Shemayim helped and burnt the korbanos faster. The second Beis Hamikdash, the Ein Eishol Shemayim Misayadzan, there was a fire from Shemayim. The Gemara tells us in Yuma that in the first Beis Hamikdash, the fire was on the Mizbeach in the shape of a lion, and the second Beis Hamikdash was in the shape of a dog. Why a dog? For one thing, is because it was done by permission of Kodesh, and Kodesh, there's a place where it says that Kodesh was abandoned as an infant and raised by a dog, and that the name Kodesh itself comes from a Persian word for dog, so therefore in token of that, it was like a dog, but of course it also represented that Jewish people are not on the high level that they were in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. In any case, the Gemara explains in Yuma that even though there was a fire in a Shemayim in the second Beis Hamikdash, it didn't actually help to burn the Korbanos. Basically, I guess we would have to say it was kind of just there for show. So therefore, they had to use the regular human fire to burn the Korbanos, and that goes a lot slower. So therefore, they would need a larger Mizbeach to have room to make a larger fire, and then it would be able to burn the Korbanos. The Sfasemes points out, well, wait a minute, Yechezkel also describes the larger size Mizbeach. And in the third Beis Hamikdash, there's going to be a fire in Hashemayim like there was in the Mishkan in the first Beis Hamikdash. So what's the problem? And he says, fine, but once they made it larger in the second Beis Hamikdash, they're not going to make it smaller again in the third Beis Hamikdash. Shibonim Erev Yemenu. So therefore, the size will be kept at 32 by 32. Ben Yehoyada gives an interesting remez in it. We have the pasuk in the Shir HaSayam. Yemincha Hashem net dori bakoyach. Your right hand, Hashem, is mighty with power. So the word koyach is chof ches, 28. So when the Mizbeach was 28, then Yemincha Hashem net dori, then your right hand, Hashem, is powerful and causes the korbanos to burn faster. So that would be an answer. However, he also Robin Omar of Shimon Pazi, Mishum Bar Kapara. However, when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael, like we said before, he used to travel back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. So he told over that of Shimon Pazi said in the name Bar Kapara. The reason why they made the Mizbeach larger is not because it wasn't big enough to burn the korbanos, but because Shisin Hoisifu. They added the Shisin into the area of the Mizbeach. The Shisin are the underground cavities and tunnels where when they pour the wine on the Mizbeach throughout the year, and the water during Sukkot, it drains down through pipes and eventually it goes down into an underground channel which goes deep underground. So now the idea is that so they incorporated that into the area of the Mizbeach. So what would happen is originally originally Rashi now those are done by the southwestern corner of the Mizbeach. So now in Shlomo's times there was a pit near the Mizbeach, near that corner, and they would pour the Nesachim on the edge of the Mizbeach, and they would dribble down onto the floor, and they would collect in that pit. So now in the second Mishmikdash, instead they incorporated that area into the actual structure of the Mizbeach, and now they have the pipes through which it goes are actually inside the Mizbeach. Now why is that? Mi'ikra Sover, because originally in the time of the first Mishmikdash, they learned that when the Pasuk says Mizbach Adama, that when the Pasuk says a Mizbeach of earth, that you should build for me a Mizbeach of earth, means Shu Otum Ba'adama, means it has to be completely closed up in the ground without any hollow spaces inside it. So it has to be, it was a wooden frame plated with copper, and as we said before, whenever they camped, they would fill it with something. We said one possibility is in Shiloh, they filled it up with rocks, but in the desert, whenever they traveled, they would fill it up with earth, and it has to be completely filled up with earth. So there can't be any hollow spaces in there, inside it, they figure. Well then, if the water and the wine has to go someplace, then it's gonna have to dribble down on the outside of the Mizbeach. Later on, when they built the second Mishmikdash, they realized we can darshan the Pasuk differently. Sia ka'achila. The drinking of the Mizbeach, namely the Nesachim that are offered on the Mizbeach, should be similar to the eating of the Mizbeach, namely the Korbanos that are burnt on it. And just like the eating of the Mizbeach, of course, is done on the Mizbeach itself. You take the pieces of the Korbanos and you burn them on the actual top of the Mizbeach. So they decided, that the drinking of the Mizbeach should also be within the actual structure of the Mizbeach itself. And therefore, that will mean that they have to make pipes inside the Mizbeach. So that means they have to make the Mizbeach larger. Umayim Mizbach Adama. So why are we calling it Mizbach Adama? They realize that you darshan that pasuk differently. Just means that it has to be completely attached to the ground. You can't build it on top of vaults or on top of tunnels, as we learned at the beginning of the parak. There can't be any empty space under the Mizbeach. So it means that, but it doesn't mean that there can't be empty space inside the Mizbeach, and that would be these pipes, that would be these channels through which the water and the wine flow. So they doubted differently, and therefore they said that now the Mizbeach can be larger and incorporate that area. As Fasemis points out, so what are we going to say? In the time of the first Mishmikdash, they made a mistake. And he says no, because again, we said before, there was the fire, Min HaShemayim, that was actually burning the Korbanos in the time of the first Mishmikdash. Well then, in that case, then the one thing, the Gemara tells us in Yuma, that fire had the property that it could consume liquids just as easily as dry things, unlike the fire that we're familiar with. So therefore, so now, then you can have Shia Kachila, the fire, just like we said before, that tongues of fire would go from one Mizbeach to another, the same way over here, we can say that tongues of fire would go and burn up the water and the wine that were poured on the edge of the Mizbeach and are dribbling down into that pit that we said before. As opposed to in the second Mishmikdash, since they knew they're not going to have that kind of fire, then therefore they have to make the Mizbeach larger in order to include that area. So far we have two reasons why they made the Mizbeach larger. One, because they needed a larger area to burn the Korbanos because the fire wasn't as effective, and the other one is because they needed to add the area of the Shisim, because they doubted the Pasuk differently and realized that the Shisim should be part of the Mizbeach. So we'll continue tomorrow. We'll continue tomorrow night, Rosh Hashanah and Matzah Shabbos, and we'll continue discussing this point of more on the subject of why the Mizbeach was enlarged, and more details about the place of the Mizbeach and the things of the Mizbeach that are necessary for its structure, and so on and so forth.